Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After today's presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, you may press star, then one, and please make sure your name is recorded when prompted. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. And I would like to turn the call over to your host, Mr. Rav Ahuja. Sir, you may begin.
Hello, and welcome, everyone, to another session of DB2 Chat with the Lab. Our topic for today is enabling applications from Oracle to DB2 the easy way. The presentation charts for this session are available from ibm.com/db2/labchats. That's LabChats. Due to a technical reasons, we are having issues with the webcast portion, so I recommend that you load the charts and follow along on the phone line. We will still try to get the web conference up and way soon. I'll pass it over now to our featured speaker today, Serge Rilau, who is the architect, the SQL architect for DB2 on Linux, Unix, and Windows. And he has been responsible for many of the Oracle compatibility features that we're going to be discussing on today's call. So over to you, Serge, and we'll start on slide number 3.
Hello, this is Pascal speaking. Let me first apologize if the sound quality isn't quite up to par. We are having these technical issues. So I'm going to talk today about enabling Oracle applications to DB2 9.7. So I'm going to have this roughly in an agenda, going through some motivation, talking about the feature set itself, and then finally about how it's actually done to move an application over from Oracle to DB2. And we will then go and ultimately then pass on to some customers and partners who have first-hand experience through our program. So let me move on to slide 4. Last March at the CeBIT presentation I held on DB2 9.7, I burned out a 110-volt computer loudspeaker, which I had thoughtlessly hooked up to Germany's 230-volt power grid without using a transformer. On that same trip, I also destroyed the charger for my electric toothbrush and my beard clipper in similar incidents. So my inability to learn from mistakes notwithstanding, it comes as no surprise that one of my favorite sayings of unknown origin is, the problem with standards, there are so many of them. In the world of relational database management systems, we are blessed with at least 3 major standards and numerous variations on these. We have ANSI SQL and ANSI SQL PSM, onto which DB2 tries to very closely lean. We have Oracle's SQL and PLSQL. And finally, we have the Sybase Microsoft TSQL family. Whenever you write an application, you have to make the choice of which renders DBMS to utilize, and hence, which dialect you will choose. Once you have made that choice, you're essentially committed. Any attempt to switch vendors to take advantage of lower prices, better technology, or better partnerships is thwarted by legacy code which requires extensive rewrites before the application can be used with another product. In addition, your skill set cannot be transferred from one product to another as easily as you might expect. The end result is a phenomenally loyal customer base. The only defense against vendor lock-in is to severely limit the exploitation of the DBMS by abstracting from it. So this, however, has severe negative implications in performance. It likely also requires you to reinvent some of the features your DBMS natively provides and which you incidentally already paid for. So let's move on to slide 5. Here I'm talking about what we have done in DB2 traditionally to bridge this gap. So in the past, DB2 facilitated porting of applications by first filling out gaps in its implementation of the SQL standard. So whenever there was a hole, we were just flush it out according to what the standard said. Extensions of the SQL standard, if not standard features by other vendors, became popular. For example, sequencers from the Oracle side or identity columns from the Sybase Microsoft side. And finally, providing tooling that translated non-DB2 SQL dialects into DB2 dialects as part of the porting process. This approach, however, had some major shortcomings. For one, the tooling could only deal with objects it could reach on the server, such as stored routines and table definitions. It is very hard to find and translate SQL that is located in the application itself within, for example, Java code. Translating this client-side SQL to DB2's dialect can quickly become a dominating factor of any porting effort. Further, the translation inevitably results in an emulation of the source DBMS on DB2, and emulations are due to impedance mismatch by definition slow. This is worsened by the fact that any subsequent tuning has to be done by developers unlikely to be skilled in DB2, in DB2's own dialect of SQL and SQLPL. So IBM DB2 9.7 for Linux, Unix, and Windows seeks to dramatically lower the barriers for applications written for Oracle when enabling them to DB2. Let's move on to slide 6, a new approach. To sidestep the issues of a traditional translation approach to application porting, several principles were implemented in DB2 9.7. The easiest and most obvious is to make DB2 much more tolerant to syntax different between the Oracle dialect and the DB2 dialect. Here we are dealing with identical function on both DBMS, but with different names. Secondly, it is clear that both products have invested into different core strengths. These core strengths over the years have been exploited by the application developers. In case of Oracle, such a core strength is the richness of the programming language PLSQL. Bringing DB2's procedural infrastructure on par with PLSQL's expressiveness largely eliminates impedance mismatch in that area. Lastly, Oracle and DB2 have areas of functions where the same syntax is used to mean different behavior. Again, working around these differences can cause emulation effects. Instead, it is better to allow DB2 to operate in an Oracle-compatible mode when working with an Oracle-based application. Following these three principles across the various areas of functions allows DB2 to expose a high-performance interface that is compatible with applications written for Oracle, both for the client side and the server side parts of the application. Let's move on to slide 7. To ensure the effectiveness of this approach, DB2 9.7 has undergone a rigorous beta program with particular focus on the set of compatibility features. Of the over 300 closed beta participants from all sorts of industries and geographies, many joined to enable their Oracle applications to DB2. What we saw was that customers and partners observed an average of 90% reduction in effort enabling an application to DB2 9.7 as compared to ports to earlier versions of DB2. For some participants, enablement turned into a near-trivial exercise where the only application change was to adapt the connect string of the JDBC driver. This was certainly not true for our biggest participant with 7.5 million lines of PLSQL code. However, even in this extreme case, we have achieved a very manageable enablement estimate. Slide 8. To allow an application written for Oracle to run on DB2 virtually unchanged, many pieces have to fall into place. Different locking mechanisms, data types, SQL, procedural language residing on the server, even the client interfaces used by the application itself need to be aligned, not only in syntax, but also semantics. All these areas have been addressed in DB2 9.7 for LUW. Changes to the application are the exception and not the rule. And IBM can rapidly assess the application changes needed, as we will later see. Here's a quick overview. DB2 has native support for Oracle's approach to concurrency control. A very high level of support for Oracle's SQL dialect ensures SQL submitted by the application will execute directly on DB2. Native PLSQL support ensures server-side application logic can execute unchanged and at high level of performance. Support for PLSQL packages preserves the structure of your application logic on the server side. There is no need to reinvent the wheel if you exploit built-in packages such as file.io APIs. Whether you use JDBC with Oracle-specific extensions, .NET, or ODBC, DB2's drivers will support your original choice of client API. Reporting scripts written for SQL Plus are supported by DB2. This also eases skills transfer for your DBAs, who very often use SQL Plus. So with VB29.7, you do not need to port an application anymore. You merely enable it. In case of packaged applications, it is even possible to share one source code for both DB2 and Oracle. In other words, enabling an Oracle application with DB2 in generally becomes, in many cases, no more complex than enabling a C program written for example, HPUX to run on AIX. Let's go to slide 9. I will now dive into more details on what exactly was done in DB2 9.7 to achieve this level of compatibility. Let's start with concurrency control and compare the pre-DB2 9.7 behavior with a new behavior. Slide 10. In the past, one of the most prominent differences between Oracle and DB2 has been the approach to concurrency control. The catchy phrase used by DBAs is readers don't block writers and writers don't block readers. I will refrain here from going into detail on isolation levels and limit myself to stating that in the vast majority of applications which use Oracle's default statement level isolation will work just fine using the DB2 default of cursor stability, also known as CS. Cursor stability isolation traditionally has been implemented so that writers block readers and in some cases, readers may block writers. The reason for that is that traditionally a transaction under CS isolation was expected to wait for the outcome of a pending concurrent transactions changes. This way, it would be guaranteed to see the very latest changes to the database. Let's move to slide 11. It turns out that there is no semantic reason why a transaction running under CS isolation waits for the outcome when encountering a changed row. An equally satisfactory behavior is to read the currently committed version of the changed row. The behavior has been implemented in DB2 9.7, and it is the default for any new database created under DB2 9.7, whether DB2 operates under compatibility mode or not. So how does this work? We see that on slide 12. What happens is that DB2 simply retrieves the currently committed version of a locked row from the log. In most cases, the required log record is still in the log buffer because the change has not been committed yet. But even if the row has been written out and also has been overwritten in the log buffer, DB2 knows exactly where to find it. So at worst, a single I.O. will bring the desired version of the row into the buffer pool. It is important to note that this behavior introduces no new objects such as, for example, rollback segments. It has no performance overhead for the writer. After all, log records need to be written anyways. It cannot cause any situation such as a snapshot to old because it is extremely unlikely that the log file needed has been archived. That is because the transaction is still open. So if, however, this happens, DB2 will simply fall back to traditional behavior and wait for the log to go away on commit or rollback. In addition to these changes, additional log avoidance techniques have been introduced into DB2 to eliminate a reader holding a log under CS isolation. As you can see, the concurrency behavior is now identical to that of Oracle. Readers do not block writers, and writers do not block readers. Let's move on to a different topic on slide 13. Having cleared one of the more prominent differences out of the way, let's look at the SQL itself. Here, several key areas stuck out when we looked at it. Differences in data types needed to be addressed. The philosophy around passing and comparison of mismatched types was incompatible. Function libraries needed to be aligned. And finally, SQL syntax itself was different in some cases. So let's start with data types on slide 14. At the heart of every database is its data. Mismatched types or mismatched semantics of these types can make it harder to move an application between DBMS. So to allow Oracle applications to run on DB2, it's crucial to support its basic proprietary types, such as strings, dates, and numerics. Beyond aligning these basic types, there are other more complex types which are commonly used in Oracle's PLSQL, which have been added to DB2 9.7 as well. So new or adjusted DB2 core data types are number. Support for number and number P, S, which is precision scale, has been added based on the ANSI DEC float data type and decimal. The big benefit of using DEC floats, which was introduced by IBM across the board from C compilers down to hardware, is its hardware acceleration on Power 6 CPUs. So you're getting a similar performance as you would expect when you're doing double or float from a number data type thanks to the hardware acceleration. Varchar 2. The Varchar 2 type behavior includes empty strings being interpreted as null in most cases and trailing blank sensitive collations. Note that in Oracle, Varchar 2 and Varchar are the same. So this is an example where DB2 has to operate in a compatibility mode to provide Oracle semantics without violating existing DB2 semantics for existing DB2 customers. Oracle Date. A DB2 database operating in Oracle Date compatibility mode includes the time component in addition to the calendar date into the data type. And finally, timestamp N, where N is the scale of fractions of seconds that can be chosen between 0, which is just date plus time, and 12, which is up to picoseconds. In addition to these core data types, there are various types and composite types which are frequently used in PLSQL, as I said earlier. So they have been added. The Boolean type can be used in procedural logic, variables, and parameters of routines. Array support in procedures, which was introduced in 9.5, has been extended to support Oracle vArray syntax and methods. In addition to regular arrays, DB2 also supports associative arrays, also known in DB2 as index by arrays. Composite types, called row types, can be used in variables, parameters, and as elements to arrays and associative arrays. Reference cursors can be assigned to variables or passed around via parameters, so you can pass cursors up and down through procedures. Let's move to slide 15, implicit casting and type resolution. In the world of languages such as PHP and Ruby, they say if it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck, then it must be a duck. What this means is that in these cases, every literal is a string, and that string gets used as whatever type comes in handy based on the context. In adherence with the SQL standard, however, and following a philosophy that a type mismatch is likely an indication of a coding mistake, DB2 has traditionally followed strong typing rules. That is, strings and numerics, for example, could not be compared unless one was explicitly cast to the other, making a decision who goes to where. Unfortunately, when an Oracle application uses weak typing in its SQL, that application would traditionally have failed to compile against DB2. In DB2 9.7 now, implicit casting, a.k.a. weak typing, has been added. That is, strings and numbers can be compared, assigned, and operated on in a very flexible fashion. In addition, untyped nulls can be used in many more places, while untyped parameter markers can be used nearly anywhere thanks to deferred prepare. In deferred prepare mode, DB2 will not resolve the type of a parameter marker until it has seen the first actual value. To round out implicit casting, DB2 also supports defaulting of procedure parameters as well as association of arguments to parameters by name. Slide 16. All DBMS provide libraries or functions to operate on the data. The problem is that no two use the same names for many of their functions, even if, in the end, the functionality is very similar or even identical. In addition to its own traditional set of functions, DB2 now supports a library compatible with Oracle. Here is a quick overview, which is by no means complete. For conversion and cast functions, 2Date, 2Char, 2Clob, 2Number, and 2Timestamp are supported. Each of these functions comes with a rich set of supported formatting strings. For date arithmetic, extract, add month, month between, next day, and a compatible plus operator that adds fractions of days are provided. DB2's already extensive support for string manipulation function has been further extended by LPAT, RPAT, InString, and InitCap. Substr also received some extensions. And finally, a mixed bag of functions such as NVL, decode, least, greater than, bit end had already been added in DB2 9.5. This greatly increased overlap in supported function between the two products implies a greatly improved out-of-the-box success when enabling an Oracle application to DB2. Slide 17. So far, we have covered concurrency, data types, typing, and functions. But the difference between Oracle and DB2 goes deeper than that. The very fabric of the SQL dialects, the keywords and semantics differ in some areas. Also, both products support some features that the other simply does not. When these features are popular, they limit the ability to submit common SQL against both products. Among the many small and big language tweaks added to DB2, here are some highlights. DB2 supports Oracle-style connect by recursion, which models a tree walk including accompanying helper functions and pseudo-columns such as level and connect by path. Many older Oracle applications still use the deprecated class-join syntax. DB2 supports this obsolete syntax, eliminating the need to upgrade to ANSI SQL join syntax first when enabling a legacy application from Oracle to DB2. Further examples of smaller features that nonetheless greatly improve compatibility are RowID, the dual dummy table, and the minus keyword, which is Oracle's synonym for the except SQL operator. Among the more interesting features added to DB2 9.7 compatibility are certainly public synonyms, which are referring, which allow referencing of objects by an unqualified name, independent of which schema the reference occurs. This concludes the overview of the changes made to DB2's SQL. With these changes in place, Oracle applications that submit SQL against the database can run largely unchanged. There are, however, major sections of many applications which are executing on the server itself. The server-side language of choice for Oracle applications is PLSQL, of course. So no claim of compatibility could be seriously made without support for PLSQL. So let's dive into that, starting on slide 18. As I noted at the beginning of this presentation, translation from one SQL dialect to another poses several problems. The resulting translated code tends to be convoluted due to automation and impedance mismatch between the source and target dialects. The application developers are not familiar with the target's SQL language dialect. That makes it hard to debug and tune the ported code. Further maintenance over time becomes a challenge due to the lack of skills. In case of package applications, the translation needs to be repeated for every new release of the application, driving ongoing maintenance costs up. In the end, the result is an emulation which by definition runs slower than the original. So in the next few slides, I will show how DB2 9.7 sidesteps all of these issues. Let's go to slide 19. DB2 9.7 has native PLSQL support. What do I mean by native? There is no translation. The source code remains as it is in the schema catalog. Developers can continue working in the language they are familiar with. There is no need to move logic to DB2's dialect, even if new logic were to be written in SQLPL, because routines using different dialects can call each other. Package application vendors can use one version of source code against both Oracle and DB2. Finally, PLSQL and SQLPL perform at exactly the same speed on DB2, since both map to the exactly same runtime infrastructure within DB2's engine. Let's go to slide 20. Thanks to the deep support, PLSQL is fully supported by the Optim Development Studio Debugger and Profiler. In this screenshot, what you see here, you see a debugging session of a routine within a package. The Optim Development Studio Debugger supports all the standard debugging options, including the modification of local variables during a debugging session. Let's go to slide 21. So what exactly does PLSQL support imply? First, there is the core syntax support. DB2's PLSQL parser understands all the common constructs of PLSQL, such as if-then-else conditional logic, while loops, local variables, and constants. As you might hear, I switched phones and micros, so it should be better now. Assignments to local variables and parameters using colon equal syntax, PLSQL pragma exception and exception handling, various forms for loops, anchoring,
parameters to other objects using percent type and percent row type notation. Even the Pragma autonomous transaction syntax and semantic is supported. Autonomous transactions allow procedures to execute in a private transaction scope. Let's go to slide 22. PLSQL can be used in various different database objects which allow procedural logic. This includes scalar functions, before and after each row triggers, procedures, anonymous blocks, and finally PLSQL packages. Anonymous blocks are basically scripts written in PLSQL which are executed ad hoc on the server without you needing to create a procedure or a function for it. Slide 23, I'm going to dive into packages. Most PLSQL in Oracle applications is contained within so-called packages. A PLSQL package, not to be confused with a DB2 package, is a collection of individual objects with the ability to differentiate between externally accessible objects and those that are mere helpers for use within the package. The NCSQL equivalent of a PLSQL package is a module. DB2 now provides support for NCSQL-style modules as well as PLSQL packages. In particular, the following capabilities are provided. Package headers declare prototypes for externally visible routines. They also define all externally visible non-procedural objects such as variables and types. Package bodies implement all private and public routines as well as all other private objects. All sub-objects allowed within Oracle's packages are also permitted in DB2. This includes variables and constants, data type definitions, package exceptions, scalar functions, procedures, cursors, and package invalidation routines. Public synonyms can be defined on PLSQL packages to simplify access to these. Let's move to a different topic on slide 24, built-in package library. Some Oracle applications utilize packages which are provided by the Oracle DBMS itself. Those libraries which provide reporting, email, or cross-connection communications are most popular. To facilitate enablement of these applications to DB2, the listed packages that you see on the screen are provided by DB2. At this point, let me highlight DBMS output, which is often used for print style debugging or tracing, as well as simple reporting. UTL file, which provides an API to do server-side I/O. And UTL mail, which can be handy to send email notifications from batch jobs. Slide 25. Oftentimes, DDL scripts and even reports are written and executed using the SQL Plus command line processor. To make it easier to transfer these scripts, as well as the skills of developers writing them, DB2 provides an SQL Plus compatible command line processor, aptly called CLP Plus. The tool provides SQL Plus compatible command options, variable substitution, column formatting, reporting functions, and finally control variables. Let's leave this area of the presentation and go to slide 26 and talk about enablement itself. So we have given you a sampling of the functionality added to DB2, which simplifies application enablement. But how is such an enablement actually done? Further, we certainly do not claim that each and every application is trivial to enable. So how do I know whether my application is a good one to enable or not? How do I size the remaining effort and actually do the work? In the next few slides, I will discuss this topic. One can isolate roughly 5 steps of enablement in a customer scenario. First comes the assessment phase. Typically, customers and ISVs alike want to tip a toe into application enablement before jumping in with both feet. And not all applications are equally well suited for an enablement. To aid in this, IBM reps have a tool called Meet DB2 at their disposal, which can quickly separate the good, the bad, and the evil. Once an application or sets of applications have been chosen, the IBM Data Movement tool is being used to pull the server-side footprint of the application from Oracle to DB2. This tool is the heart and soul of the actual enablement. With that step done, the application, now connected to DB2, needs to be tested. After a certain time of parallel production where results can be compared between the application running on Oracle and on DB2, cutover can be performed. Let's illuminate the first two steps in more depth. Slide 27. There are certain telltales which indicate whether an application may be more or less suitable to be enabled from Oracle to DB2. One such telltale is the client API, which is used to connect to the DBMS. Naturally, an API which is non-proprietary to Oracle is more suitable because in this case, both Oracle and DB2 have drivers written to the same specs. APIs falling into this category include, for example, ODBC, JDBC, and .NET. APIs which cause a bigger challenge are Pro-C or Pro-COBOL. As you have seen, the features described in this talk included what I would call regular SQL features. At this point, no attempt has been made to align extensions such as text search, advanced queuing, or spatial. While DB2 has matching features, including OmniFind, MQ series, and spatial extenders, adjusting an application to these does not come for free. Therefore, applications that do not use such extensions or, at the very least, have these extensions well encapsulated are preferable. Slide 28. As noted earlier, the MeetDB2 tool, which is available to IBM reps and select partners, is the preferred way to classify the ease of an application enablement to DB2. When fed with DDL scripts, the tool uses DB2's actual PLSQL parser along with a knowledge base to rehearse the application enablement. The tool then produces a report that includes both a high-level report as shown here, as well as a detailed report which lists all of the compilation errors or references to unsupported functions. This report is then used by IBM to help size the enablement effort so you know what you're facing. This particular report, which you see here, it originates from the Open Browser application, which was enabled to DB2 within just about 1 week. Slide 29. As part of the beta program, we randomly picked 18 applications from partners who graciously shared their source code with us. These applications used anywhere from 2,285,000 lines of PLSQL code, with a total of 750,000 lines of PLSQL code. As shown by the MeetDB2 tool, we were able to establish that between 90 and 99% of the statements were immediately understood by DB2 9.7. The average actually was 98%. Let me stress that this statistic does not claim that DB2 supports 90 to 99% of all Oracle DBMS features. It simply indicates that out of 100 lines of PLSQL or DDL code, an average 2 lines of code typically require some sort of attention. So this is the level of attention and thus the features used by the application. The level of attention and thus the effort to fix these lines depends on the problem. Often we find that simple script-wide search and replace actions in text editors can cut down the number of its mismatches, again by half. Slide 30. You will hear shortly from our guest speakers that during the beta program, the participants still use the migration toolkit to move table definitions and data to DB2. The participants simply disabled the SQL and PLSQL translation capabilities of the migration toolkit, using it for data movement and table DDL translation only. With general availability of DB2 9.7, we are now providing a freely available tool via DeveloperWorks that is designed to enable Oracle applications to DB2 9.7 in a very streamlined fashion. So how does this work? Essentially, you merely connect to your Oracle database on one side and to an empty DB2 9.7 database on the other. This DB2 database must have been created in Oracle compatibility mode. Next, you choose whether you want to only transfer DDL, such as table views, sequences, and PLSQL routines and packages, or if you also want to transfer data. Once you have made this decision and the data movement tool has extracted all the objects from the Oracle database, you switch to the deployment pane. That's on slide 31. In the deployment pane, the tool presents you with a nav tree of all the objects it has extracted from Oracle. The first step you perform is to select all the objects and press the deploy button. So essentially, Control A to select everything and then deploy. The tool now attempts to deploy all those objects to the empty DB2 database. For objects that have no PLSQL or SQL within them, such as sequences, tables, indices, and so on, it will generate DB2 syntax and create the objects. For objects such as views, routines, triggers, and packages, the tool will simply take the DDL as is from Oracle and execute it on DB2, relying on the fact that SQL and PLSQL are compatible. As a result, you will see that most objects in the nav tree will receive a check mark as being successfully deployed. Some, however, will be flagged red. When you now select the flagged object, the data movement tool will show the DDL within its editor alongside with the error message given upon failure of deployment. So what follows now is an interactive patch cycle where the exceptions are being treated one by one. Sometimes they are cascades where fixing one object will then unravel a lot of others. In case of custom applications, your patches may involve the DB2 SQL dialect. In case of a packaged application, however, you will typically patch the DDL so that the outcome will compile on both Oracle and DB2, preserving a single base of source code. Once all objects have been successfully deployed, you're ready to start testing. So let's take a look at actual examples on slide 32, OpenBravo. I showed you earlier the MeetDB2 report from OpenBravo. OpenBravo is an open source application which today is supported for Oracle and Postgres. Now, the nice thing about OpenBravo, because it is open source, is that you can actually go and look at the source code. So you can see what PLSQL was used for yourself, as to know that I'm not just throwing a vaporware. When the OpenBravo developers originally looked at enabling to DB2, the estimate was that it would take up to 2 years to perform the port. As part of our DB2 9.7 beta program, OpenBravo can now be enabled to DB2 within a week, and we are looking forward to seeing the first OpenBravo on DB2 deployment soon. Let's quickly go to slide 33. Now, rather than quote customers and partners, why don't we let them speak for themselves of their experiences with DB2 9.7? Let's go to slide 34. And let me introduce Bernie O'Connor, who is Director of Information Technology at Anixa Incorporated, a global distributor of enterprise cabling, security systems, wire and cable, fasteners, and supply chain services. Bernie is responsible for technical architecture and for data services. Technical architecture includes architectural design decisions for development and deployment for new applications. Data services includes management of databases and database gateways. Welcome, Bernie.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be able to share with you Anixter's experience with the DB2 9.7 beta. First, let me tell you something about Anixter's business. Anixter is a leading global supplier of communications, security products, electrical and electronic wire and cable, fasteners, and other small components. Throughout the world, we provide innovative supply chain management services to more than 100,000 customers in 52 countries. Anixter's goal is to be more than a distributor. We want to also be a business partner. Next slide, please. So why DB2 9.7? The business driver is to hold down costs. By maintaining skilled professionals for one enterprise software stack instead of two or more, personnel, even more than hardware and software, is a critical cost to be considered. Anixter already has specialists in WebSphere, MQ Series, and DB2. Next slide, please. The business application for the DB2 9.7 beta is a warehouse management system. This system was contracted to be done in WebSphere DB2. It was actually delivered by the vendor in JBoss Oracle, and Anixter still wanted to do WebSphere and DB2. To give you some sense of the size of the application, I have here lines of code for Java, JSP, XML, XSD, JavaScript, more than 300,000 lines of code, and in terms of tables, 223 with 194 views, many of them nested. Next slide, please. I have great news on the ease of migration. It worked. It migrated successfully. We ran the exact same test as with JBoss Oracle, and with WebSphere DB2 9.7, read consistency worked. This was a very big deal for Anixter. writers didn't block readers for the application. We also received equivalent performance. We had what I would consider some normal tuning using indexes. Next slide, please. In terms of extra effort, there were 2 points, RI design and data types, that I think you could benefit from. In terms of referential integrity, Oracle permits selective enforcement of RI. We can disable constraints and re-enable them in an Oracle environment, and that's not true in DB2. So our physical design included an aggregation table that was denormalized and had null parent RI references. So to resolve this, we either had to drop the RI or to break out the aggregation into multiple tables. In other words, create a normalized design. And this was easy to accomplish. The data types, there is a conversion tool that we used for number columns that had some problems that were easy to fix. We converted deck float 16, we converted number, and the tool converted it to deck float 16 under certain circumstances. And an unqualified decimal column resulted in decimal 5, comma 0. Again, easy to fix once the DDL problems were identified. 2 data types that were non-problems for us included timestamps. There is a difference in the number of microseconds, and that manipulation causes no problem. And varchar 2, that also was no problem for our application. Next slide, please. So in brief, the DB2 9.7 beta program was a great experience. I'd specifically like to thank IBM, iDug, and Gold Consultants. So thanks to IBM's Maria Schwenger, our DB2 enablement advocate, to iDug's Chris Heaton and Martin Hubel, who let Anister know about this, and also IBM DB2 Gold Consultants and Data Champions Dave Belke, and former Gold Consultant Ingo Mueller, who actually helped us with the conversion. And now I'd like to pass the baton to the next speaker, Brett Annandale, the CEO of Anantech.
Thank you very much, Bernie. I'm Brett Annandale, CEO and founder of Anantech Limited. We're a UK company. A lot of our experience over the years has been in finance, specifically the investment banks, a lot of risk management, some business continuity. This is all on slide 42, and as well as some security and information assurance. So we've done a lot of different things. We've worked with a lot of different databases. And for us, it was very, very interesting to become involved with the DB2 product. We did not come to the product with an extensive amount of experience, so in many respects, there was a lot of learning for us, and I think that makes our experience possibly a bit different from some of the other contributors. A bit about our product, Wisdom. Wisdom is what we call a central management encyclopedia. Effectively, the whole idea is to give a single organizational view of all information, irrespective of where it comes from. So it's a lot of integration, a lot of pulling data together, a lot of dealing with the complexity of pulling a lot of information together. Wisdom has been designed to support multiple databases from day one. That was always inherent in the design. There was never any sort of debate that we were not going to go out there and not going to support every database available. However, with all of these other things, and you know, speaking to a lot of IT professionals like yourselves, we all know that with time and other commitments, things that you intend to do get pushed back until they need to be done. In our case, we were still running on MS SQL Server, even though we had this data abstraction layer over the databases, but we hadn't really gone the whole hog to port to a number of databases. The whole idea also, just to emphasize with Wisdom and with its flexibility, is it is designed to access not just a one type of database at a time, but multiple databases simultaneously. As these things happen, and you know, again, we're all professionals, we've all been around the block a number of times, the need to port to both Oracle and to DB2 arose at the same time. Luckily, at the same time, again, we were offered the opportunity to participate in the beta program. And, you know, the benefits to us were is that it saved us a lot of work. And in essence, as you'll see, it was couldn't have been better timing. Moving on to slide number 43. Now, the key thing to emphasize, we put a lot of work in terms of thinking about how it would interoperate with a lot of databases simultaneously. So there's a lot of thinking in terms of middle layer, middle tier, but we still had the problem that we had to deal with a lot of SQL and DDL differences. There was still a database layer, right, that had to be ported. And we had, you know, come with a lot of the other people on this call. We still had a lot of tables, a lot of store procedures we had to move across. But even though we believe there were certain things inherent in the product which make it easier, we were still in a position where we had to port to two databases simultaneously. That was unavoidable. There was going to be work. There was work. Luckily, that work was a hell of a lot less than would otherwise have been. Our approach now, at first, obviously, until we entered the beta program, we were not aware of what IBM were intending to do in terms of their being able to support Oracle code on DB2. But obviously, immediately we heard it, we saw the value, and it definitely made our lives a lot easier. So from our point of view, we're not a big company. We're not huge. We haven't got hundreds of consultants. So everything we need to do efficiently. So the whole thing is that we, first of all, decided that we were going to go and use Oracle effectively as a halfway house to migration. So we used the Oracle migration tool to build an initial Oracle reference for Wisdom, and then we used the MTK toolkit. Luckily, we had access to one of the people from IBM who I must commend commend on his advice in terms of making use of that toolkit to then move to vanilla DB2. So in other words, i.e. the old 9.5 syntax. We did take the strategic decision that we were going to go for native DB2 support to be able to support legacy DB2 environments. Then, luckily, at that stage we had a Oracle reference version, we had a DB2 9.5 and before version, and then with some minor tweaks, we could take the Oracle code and then turn it into a DB2 9.7 version. Bottom line, from going from one database covered to effectively four, being SQL Server, raw Oracle, legacy DB2, DB2 9.7. And that needs to be emphasized. We were going for all four simultaneously. Moving on to slide number 44. As I said, we were going for the lot. So it was a hell of a lot more complex than a simple port. That we were not going from one environment to another, as well as the other thing to emphasize is that we had a lot of dynamically generated SQL because one of Wisdom's unique selling points is the fact that it is very, very dynamic. It has to be able to change in real time as the business changes. So that made the port, which would generally be something that we would consider very, very complex. Luckily, the new capabilities of DB2 9.7 made that a lot easier, and for that we are very, very grateful to IBM. So to summarize, as I say there, DB2 gave us one dev platform, suite of tools for native for Oracle support, and the new DB2 9.7. As we were working with the beta version of 9.7 and the support for Oracle was improving with each iteration, we did still work with a version of Oracle, but you know, if we were to do it again, that may not be necessary. Bottom line, bang for buck. And particularly for those of you out there who are either resource constrained, as we most are in the economic conditions, as Anantech, we believe that's a big selling point for the new release. As CEO of Anantech, I would like to say on behalf of the company, we're very, very proud to be part of the DB2 beta program, and we're very, very grateful to the people we interacted with, particularly Patrick Dantresongla and Marianne Schwing. Great people to work with. They were really, really helpful, and great people. We honestly say they were great people to support us. You know, as an ISV, we cannot complain about any of the support we've received. And now I would like to hand over to Gene Ostrowski from ExactCost for his experiences.
Hello. ExactCost is a software technology company focused on clinical cost and process improvement solutions for healthcare providers. Our proprietary technology assists healthcare providers in improving their revenue and operational margins. ExactCost solutions are delivered via the web without any capital investment, enabling the organization to achieve sustainable bottom line improvements. Slide 47. We decided to add enablement to our application with the IBM platform as part of our expanded partnership with IBM. This will offer the client a complete package that includes Exactcost solutions and the services from one of the strongest brands in the world. We will be able to participate in IBM's HIF, Healthcare Integration Framework, and will acquire new clients and leads. Exactcost solutions will be demonstrated to potential customers at IBM's Dallas Innovation Center. Slide 48. Exactcost applications utilize Oracle's 10G as a database. Since we are SaaS, we use many of Oracle's advanced features in SQL queries and PLSQL code. We had about 50,000 lines of PLSQL code, 234 tables, and more than 80,000 lines of Java code. Our first target before we started to participate in the beta program was DB2 version 9.5. After running the MTK tool for a few days, we estimated that this would take about 3.5 months just for the PLSQL code, and would it include changes not just in the database layer, but in the application layer too. Our goal was to have minimum code rewrite and have one code for Oracle and DB2 databases. That brought us to the DB2 9.7 beta program. There was a great experience in using Optim Development Studio and just drag and drop objects from Oracle to DB2 database connections. In most cases, there were only minor changes in the PLSQL code to be compiled and ran in DB2. With a lot of help from our enablement advocates, Olaf Müller, Ranon Rüttlinger, and Jaffa Steinberg, we completed our recent code and data enablement project from Oracle to DB2 in 80% less time than we originally estimated with a DB2 version 9.5. We saved approximately 2.5 months, and now I will pass it back to the conference coordinator for Q&A.
Thank you. At this time, we will open the lines for questions, but before that, we'll have a brief polling session. There will be two polling questions. Please listen to each question before casting your vote. Question number one, kindly rate this session. Please press star 1 for good, star 2 for satisfactory, star 3 for poor. Please vote now. Voting has ended for question number 1. Question number 2. Would you like to be contacted to receive further information related to today's topic? Please press star 1 for yes or press star 2 for no. Please vote now. Voting has ended for question number 2. At this time, we will conduct the question and answer portion of today's call. In order to ask a question in conference, please press star 1 and please record your name when prompted. Please make sure your phone is not muted when prompted to record your name. You may also withdraw your question by pressing star then 2. Once again, to ask a question in conference, please press star, then 1, and record your name. The first question is from Matt Wally. Your line is open.
Hi, I was just curious which editions of DB297 support SQL compatibility with Oracle?
Good question. Yeah, so the support today at this point, anything from workgroup up. So what is not supported is Express C and Express, but workgroup and Enterprise Edition are supported.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Gary Lipp. Your line is open.
Thank you. I'd like to get some ask the following question. Our organization recently completed a proof of concept in which we looked at very closely at the Oracle migration technology that was developed by a contractor, I believe that that IBM worked with on this, adding this functionality to Oracle functionality into DB2. The contractor is Enterprise DB. In the proof of concept that we used, this involved a migrating an Oracle database to Postgres. And one of the things that we had found, had to do with a large time investment in looking at in going through the differences in between the two versions of SQL. I'd like to get a sense as to what additional capability IBM brought to the table in their in this coordination with Enterprise DB.
All right. So the to answer this question, it's probably best if I describe a little bit of the scope of our partnership with Enterprise DB. So Enterprise DB contributed the PLSQL compiler technology. They contributed the built-in packages, and they contributed a fair chunk of the CLP plus, so that's the SQL plus compatibility layer. And in addition to that, we also, of course, relied on them a lot on their experience and their consultants. The SQL itself, everything that was SQL and everything that was core infrastructure was implemented deeply into DB2. So what you're getting is you're getting the full power of DB2's optimizer and of DB2's SQL compiler, which is fairly vast and fairly encompassing, I would think. So with respect to the SQL experience that you had, that's between Postgres's base and DB2 base. They're fairly different. So I would think, and I'm going out on a limb here, that DB2's coverage of SQL is probably higher than the one of Postgres, at least as I know it, until version 8.2. I don't know whether Enterprise DB has done any further investments past version 8.2. So on the SQL side, you will see differences. On the PLSQL side and the built-in packages, since it's the same, both coming from Enterprise DB, you will see that everything that worked there still works, and everything that didn't still doesn't, with small exceptions. So there were some things like nested save points, for example, that DB2 has, which we were able to adopt for PLSQL. Enterprise DB didn't have this at the time. So, and then there were other things like, for example, multi-action triggers that I think Enterprise DB has, which we did not decide to implement at this point. But generally, PLSQL, very similar. SQL, probably not that similar because of the underlying infrastructure of Postgres versus DB2.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Eric Eggdorf. Your line is open.
Hi there. My question is relating to the Oracle optimizer hints. You know, we've seen problems in the past with Oracle when we go to new versions that they would change some of the underlying optimization features, and so that our hints would have to be rewritten. So if we're going to move code to DB2 directly, how are you handling the optimization add-ins?
All right. Very simply put, we just ignore them. So for us, all the Oracle optimization hints are just C-style comments, so you have this /*/, and we just see it as these comments. In general, in a DB2 world, you do not use hints. There are special case scenarios where you can do that, but then we typically don't go through the hints embedded in the statements. We typically go through a concept that in Oracle you would, I think, know as an outline, so which means you can capture an SQL, like outside there is a library of critical SQL statements, and then we describe how we want the plan to look in this level. So in general, if you don't use hints, you don't need to patch them up when you go from release to release. So of course, DB2, we pride ourselves in having always had a cost-based optimizer, and cost-based optimization being developed by IBM and the research center like 25 years ago. So we claim that we use a lot, that we need a lot less hinting than Oracle. So I hope that you will just not see that problem very often.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Victor McDonald. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. I'm referring to the new SQL on DB2, slide 17. The new SQL includes the proprietary Oracle syntax, such as the old style outer join. So I'm assuming then that instead of converting proprietary Oracle SQL, we've simply added the old Oracle syntax, SQL syntax, to DB2. Is that correct, first of all? And secondly, does that not make DB2 now non-ANSI standard as far as SQL?
Right. Okay. So let me answer both questions in the order posed. So when you take a look at the way how DB2's compiler works, we have on the top we have a parser, and that parser it builds. It doesn't build a parse tree like many other compilers do. What it does is it builds a relational model of the query in memory, and then we use that to do further transformation like optimization and all these things. So what we did when we added the outer join syntax, the plus style outer join syntax, what we did was we simply enhanced the parser so that it would produce for the plus join syntax the same internal relational model as it would have produced if it were a proper ANSI style outer join. So there is not a translation going on here. It's similar to like the PLSQL. So we go straight to our internal a presentation, and therefore you benefit from the same performance characteristics. So for us, it makes no difference whatsoever which syntax you choose. Now, with respect, so what does all this do to the ANSI standard? And this brings us back to the compatibility mode. So especially, I mean, for our DB2 customers, we would hate nothing more than if our DB2 customers start suddenly using the plus join syntax, right? So what we have is we have a thing called a bit vector, a DB2 compatibility vector, which has individual bits for things that either are incompatible to what DB2 does, and we need to switch it into different modes so it can work in ANSI mode, DB2 mode, as well as in Oracle mode at the same time, and also for things we just hate, like the join syntax. So in this case, we also have added a bit for that. In general, when you're operating in Oracle mode, what you do is you just set this thing to ORA, and that will just turn on all the bits. So we have been careful about not violating the standard. However, sometimes we have chosen to extend the standard, like, for example, for the implicit casting. DB2 was pretty much the only product that was still obeying the original standard of strong typing, and at some point that just makes no sense if you're the only one standing on the hill. But in general, we try to only do violations of the standard under special flags that you can choose not to enable.
Thank you.
The next question is from Brian Hahn. Your line is open.
Thank you. I was curious about what platforms were being supported for this, both currently and in the future, specifically wondering if Z-Linux was ever going to be supported.
Okay. So with respect to platforms, we support all the platforms of the Linux, Unix, and Windows code base. So that covers your various flavors of Linux, including Z-Linux. It covers HP, it covers Sun, AIX, Windows, and I seem to think, I'm not quite sure where we are on Mac. There was some push at some point to have some support for that. But so all the normal DB2 platforms that are supported are also supporting the compatibility mode. Now, with respect to DB2Z OS, that is a different code base, or DB2 iSeries, for example. So these are different code bases, and support for these would come somewhat depending on how successful we are, of course. Success breeds success, and also depends then on the timeline and the importance to these customers.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Imran Mudassir. Your line is open.
Hello. My question is are there any statistics, formal statistics available after the migration from Oracle to DB2?
That's a very good question. So we have done performance tests comparing PLSQL with SQLPL. So the DB2, an application written in DB2 compared with an application written in Oracle mode, and compared it both on DB2 to make sure that we are not having an emulation effect where things get slower. I do not have referenceable and publishable benchmarks for moving an Oracle application to DB2. And the reason for that is rooted in the Oracle license agreement. If you check the Oracle license agreement, it actually prohibits you from publishing any Oracle benchmarking results without prior written consent by Oracle. So if I were to tell you that I have run any benchmarks and I tell you what the results are, then that would, of course, violate that agreement and they could come after me. It was, of course, for us very crucial to make sure that in the beta program we ensured that our customers who moved applications over came back to us and said that the performance was in line with what they expect. Generally speaking, my expectation is if you're having an application that was written towards Oracle and was tuned towards the Oracle optimizer, towards the Oracle runtime engine, and you then move it to DB2 without doing any significant tuning besides these things that was talked earlier about adding an index here and there, then typically I would expect you should stay within about 90% of the original performance, which is going from a very highly tuned system to an untuned system, in my eyes, acceptable. And then when you then start tuning and exploiting DB2 specific features, like, for example, the extreme compression, then I would see a lot of benefits. Now, places where we do have information is in the SAP arena. And because we have lots of customers who tossed out their Oracle database and replace it with DB2 on an SAP application upgrade. And there we do see performance improvements across the board, especially when people start turning on compression.
All right. Thank you.
Our next question is from Sia Garajan Elangovan. Your line is open.
Thank you. Hi. In Oracle, we can instruct the compiler to use some index selectively. Right? Is there any concept in DB2 9.7 to make the compiler use particular index, even though if it is not selected default?
Okay, I think this is basically what you're asking is whether we have the ability to hint. Is that correct?
Yes, hint kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, in DB2, our philosophy is that we think hinting is a bad thing, and as was indicated by an earlier question, once you have a hint in and you get an upgrade of your Oracle database, which has a different optimizer, then these hints can really badly backfire. So we're really avoiding having hints inside of the SQL. We do have the concept of what we call optimizer profiles, which are handled outside. And you can go, and if you are having a procedure or some SQL that is causing you trouble, you can go and you can isolate that SQL. And in the Optim Development Studio, they have one area around the performance expert. And in 9.7, they can actually go and then find that query and provide the necessary hints sideways without changing the SQL and make sure that then the plan is chosen the way you want it. So that is the way how to do it. But we don't directly support hinting within the SQL statements because we think it's a really bad thing that backfires on you later.
Okay, thanks.
Our next question is from Sumit Sharma. Your line is open.
Thank you. I had a quick question, which was, is there a licensing implication to this, to having a DB, to having, you know, Oracle compatibility? And secondly, you know, if going forward, is DB2 recommending that applications which are ported over, you know, like-to-like, moving from Oracle and they're using DB2 in the compatibility mode, are you expecting that we should retain the applications in the Oracle mode, or do we actually move over to DB2 at a later point in time?
All right. So first on the licensing thing, I'm not 100% sure I understand the question. So there are certain editions that support the compatibility, right? So for example, ExpressC and Express, you do not have this capability available. So license or not, you can't use it. When the capability is available, like in Workgroup, then there is no need to have an additional feature. There is no additional payment. It's part of the base capabilities of DB2, and you do not have to pay extra for it, assuming that the addition supports it, which is Workgroup upwards. So I hope that answers that part of the question. Now, the other question about what happens if I actually move an application over now, am I expected, or is it desirable that I later on over time somehow morph my application over? And that's completely up to you. So we understand that a lot of skills out there are Oracle skills. People know PLSQL. So I do not mind if an application stays within PLSQL, and that's part of the promise of the value, right? Because if I tell you, oh, it's easy to move the application from Oracle to DB2, but then you have 2 years later, you have this big effort to DB2ize it to make it blue, then of course I have just backloaded your problem. So we are absolutely not advising that. So you can go and choose whatever you want. You can have PLSQL as well as the DB2 dialect side by side. For vendors who support multiple platforms, then in this case, we probably recommend that they just stick with the Oracle, because that's then where you get the big footprint and you have one source code base, and having Oracle and DB2 side by side supported is not going to cost you anything, or not much at any rate. Does that answer the question?
Yes, thank you very much.
Our next question is from Kishore Kola. Your line is open.
Hi, this is like a question related to is there any online documentation that already posted by IBM, the way we can migrate from existing Oracle to DB2 in a step-by-step approach? So kind of like based on the documentation, the way we can get started and see the difference in migration path.
Right. So we have so the chat with the lab that I just gave here right now, there's going to be a developer article with that content. There is already a developer article on the IBM Data Movement Tool, which is the central tool that describes how to use the tool. And there is going to be a red book, which we are currently reviewing. So it's written. We are currently in the review process. And the goal is to have it out, and I'm leaning a bit out of the window here, hopefully within the next 4 weeks. So, and that would be an Oracle to DB2 enablement red book. And that should become then hopefully the Bible that everyone goes by. So give us another few weeks, and you will find it popping up, and I will certainly make sure it's being announced properly.
Okay, thank you. One more last question.
Sure.
When you have done a couple of case studies when you migrated from Oracle to DB2, do you see like a big difference in the performance in terms of inserts, deletes, and also the selects? It's only purely selects you saw the difference in the performance?
Okay, I can speak to this again in general terms. Again, I'm not allowed to publish any benchmarks here.
Okay.
In general terms, when you take a look at the so with respect to updates and insert performance, the problem that you're having the way how Oracle works is that whenever you do an update or you do an insert, you do the insert into the actual row, and then there is all this stuff around the rollback segments and all these things that have to be done, right? So you end up doing, I think, essentially like four IOs for every insert, right? You do one IO into the actual table row, You do one I/O for the log for that row. You do one I/O for the rollback segment, I think, and then you have that also logged. So you have four total I/Os. And then when you're doing queries, you have to, because of statement-level isolation, so it might not be the last changed row that you're finding. You might have to go and you have to jump multiple levels back to find the version at the beginning of the statement. Right? So what we have seen is that customers who did testing in high transaction environments found that as you add concurrency, so as you have more and more users doing updates, deletes, inserts, and selects, that DB2 behaves more predictable and is more benign with respect to adding more concurrency. And we attribute that to the fact that the currently committed semantics using curse stability has a constant cost. And it does not have an extra cost to do insert and update because it's just the same two IOs you always had, like inserting into the row and doing the log record. So that's as far as I can go, I think, at this point.
Yeah, and that sounds good.
Our next question is from Henry Bordeaux. Your line is open.
I heard you before mentioning increased performance on SAP system, and I was a bit surprised because I didn't see yet DB2 version 9.7 in the SAP compatibility matrix. That would be the first one. The second one, did you see that performance improvement specifically going into 9.7, or is it just generally going into DB2 version 9.5? And are you using the Oracle mod, which would be strange, I think, in the SAP world, because you can support DB2 natively? Is there still a benefit for going into the Oracle mod in this case?
Right. Okay. So when I was talking about the performance benefits we have been seeing with SAP customers, this is, of course, customers who have done these things live in production. So that is, of course, not 9.7. That is a lot based on DB2 version 9 and DB2 version 9.5. We see typically improvements with respect to they get higher throughput with less CPUs, and that we have seen that in customer scenarios as well as the formal SAP benchmarks that you can actually look at. When you compare apples to apples to machines, you find that we are more resource conscious. So we find that we have, for example, very high levels of compression on SAP, like some tables compress up to 70%. And that, of course, given that an SAP system is very often, whether it's a warehouse or an R3, is typically I/O bound, that immediately turns into a performance benefit for you. So everything I was talking there with respect to SAP was 9.5 actual information. And I'm pretty sure there must be some IOD or IDAC talks that maybe have talked about this in maybe in Denver. Now with respect to 9.7, there are additional things we have done, especially on the compression. So we're now compressing indexes, we are compressing temp tables, and SAP is going to exploit that, and that is further improving the compression, which further improves the performance. Another thing is you were asking about the DB2 9.7 certification for SAP. One of the big advantages of the SAP DB2 relationship is that we have here in the lab, maybe 50 meters away from where I'm sitting right now, there is an SAP team that has been doing DB2 9.7 testing since the beginning of this year. So we knew when we shipped DB2 9.7 GA that it will work with SAP. What we are now doing is the last mop-up testing to just do a sanity test to make sure that everything works, and you will probably see the SAP certification of 9.7 within the next 4 to 8 weeks, I would guess. Typically, it's about 6 to 8 weeks after we GA that SAP certifies our latest release. Now, with respect to Oracle mode, absolutely you would not run an SAP system in Oracle mode, right? So because SAP has enabled 2DB2 a long time ago, and they have their very special tuned system, so we would not want to mess that.
Okay, so let's say basically you would advise, even if it's a bit fresh, as we are converting some new system, you would advise to go straight to 9.7 rather than 9.5 between a risk mitigation and a performance improvement?
That's a very, very difficult question to answer in a webcast. I mean, there are certainly two functions. One of them is how conservative are you, and the other one, how much do you want the features. There are some really nice features in 9.7 around automatic storage, which is great stuff, online table moves, the high compression. So there are lots of carrots, right? So the question is whether you're willing to go onto a GA level. And we have had very good, thanks to the long test cycle, we have very good feedback. We are very confident that GA is a high-quality performance and a high-quality product out of the gate. But it really depends on your requirements and your level of paranoia and conservatism, whether you just can't think about going to a GA level product or you want to wait for fixed spec one.
Sure. Thank you.
Welcome.
The next question is from Victor McDonnell. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. Follow up on an earlier question regarding proprietary Oracle SQL and the PL SQL. What arrangements have been made with Oracle as far as licensing? Are there any issues? Has authorization been obtained? Is there any potential for future issues regarding implementing the proprietary Oracle items within DB2?
All right, so let me see how I can answer this one without getting the lawyer coming down on me for having something audio taped here that can be used in a court. So there is absolutely no arrangement with Oracle on the topic. So this is done without, or we are not an official Oracle authorized PLSQL implementer. So this has been done in a clean room, however. So we are fairly confident that we crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's that the lawyers put before us to make sure that we are not getting kicked against the shin for doing something we are not allowed to do. In general, APIs such as Syntax is not even copyrightable. So what we're doing is we're sharing the Syntax, but we are competing on the implementation. Our implementation, of course, is 100% different than the one of Oracle. And that is what is the important part with respect to intellectual property. The syntax itself is not protected. So the only thing we could have violated would be reading material we're not allowed to read. And we are very careful to only get our sources from Amazon.com.
Very interesting.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed.
Thank you.
At this time, I show no further questions.
We have a couple of questions that have come in from the online conference. So let's take a couple of those questions and then wrap it up. One of the questions from Thiagarajan is, the IBM Data Movement tool, is it free? And can we comment on the availability of that tool?
All right, yeah. So this Data Movement tool is absolutely free. It's not open source, but it is free for download. It's just 900 kilobytes. And there is a DeveloperWorks article. If you go to DeveloperWorks, IBM.com/DeveloperWorks, and you search for IBM Data Movement Tool, you should find it, including the article explaining how to use it. So no cost associated with that. Let me add to that then also the IBM, the Meet DB2 tool, which is the tool that is used for the assessment. That one is, let me just stress this is currently not freely available to everyone. So we currently have this made available to everyone within IBM. So if you are interested and you want to get your application assessed, basically bring your DDL or ask your IBM rep to come out to you, and then they can then do the assessment and turn that into some sort of a dollar estimate. So the Meet tool, not available for the general public. The IBM Data Movement tool, available for the general public and free for download on DeveloperWorks.
And just to comment further, there would be a future DB2 chat with the lab where we will talk more about the tooling that can be used with DB2 9.7. That includes Data Studio as well as the Optum suite of tools that can be very useful in migrating Oracle applications to DB2. Another question that has come in online is from Boris. And Boris asks, are you going to increase the number of PLSQL-supported features? What about PLSQL native packages? My understanding is that as of right now, you only support a handful of those.
All right. So we are. So the initial set of features was driven, I mean, besides, of course, available resources and time, was driven by what we saw customers were actually using. So we tried to really concentrate on what was popular. So and so we decided on two handful, actually, of built-in packages. So we have about 10 of them, plus the PLSQL and SQL set that I talked about. We are committed to keep listening to what customers find, what customers use. There are various things that are in the works, for example, bulk collect and for all, some extensions to functions. We are looking at conditional compilation. So there is an ongoing effort to further fine-tune and finer polish the compatibility story around DB2 to make sure that customers, as they start jumping on this, there are bound to be some features that are popular that we just did not expect. And we are committed to work to resolve these issues over time. Now, the other question that, of course, I get every time is, so what happens when Oracle changes their features or they add all sorts of stuff? And the interesting story here is if you take a look, you will actually find that both PLSQL as well as SQL are fairly stable. There's not that many new features coming in. Actually, Oracle is on record for wanting to stabilize the SQL standard. They wanted to shut it down, and I kind of agree that the SQL is, standard by now is so big that there's very few features that people would still use that are new. So there's very little movement on that area, which makes this a good timing for us. The other thing, of course, is can Oracle do something to change it so that we are not compatible anymore? Well, if they were to do this, then they would also not be compatible with their own customer base anymore, and that would certainly be very hurtful. So we are. We think we are at a fairly stable spot, and we will keep improving as we see customer features being popular, and we will be reactive to that.
All right. Thank you, Serge. And that's all the time we have for questions today. I'd like to thank everyone and thank the speakers for their participation. And we'd like to apologize for technical difficulties with the web conference as well as the phone lines today. And would like to let you know that a replay of this webcast, including the audio and the video, will be available within a week or two, and we'll send a notification to everyone who registered if they want to listen to the webcast replay. That concludes today's call. Thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes today's conference. At this time, all parties may disconnect.
Okay.